Welcome to the Retail Tech Podcast. This is your host, Darius Bousefi. Today, I'm speaking with Adam Stiska, Director of Mobile and Digital Strategies at Goodwill Industries International. How are you today, Adam?
I'm doing well, thank you.
You are responsible for digital strategies, and that means pretty much all the different online touch points. Is that correct?
Yeah, anytime we from Goodwill Industries International are engaging with our consumers or program participants online, we have some kind of involvement in the messaging and with that.
Looking at your own background, how did you end up being in this business and this role?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've always been very interested in two things, one of which you might consider traditional sort of advertising, you know, kind of grew up watching commercials, not just watching them, but maybe studying them. And always found it sort of fascinating the way that, you know, companies communicated themselves. And it was more than the product, you know, it was always about the experience, the way it made you feel, you know, kind of that emotional connection. So that was always really interesting for me. And then simultaneously, you know, kind of grew up and really formed during the internet revolution. So, you know, as the bubble was growing for internet, that's really when I started to take a vested interest in technology and website development and what the potential of that could all be. And then they've kind of happily merged, you know, over time into my current role at Goodwill Industries International, where I've been able to, you know, use this amazing world that has been added for marketers and communicators and be able to tell Goodwill's story. And you know, of course, Goodwill's is a older brand. It's been around for 116 years. So being able to bring that brand into the 21st century and beyond has been a real experience for sure.
Translating that legacy online is a very interesting thing.
We do have a membership structure, and there's 162 local Goodwills, you know, and local markets that serve local communities. And, you know, we from Goodwill Industries International, we'd like to provide consistency with the branding and, you know, make sure that when people are looking for Goodwill online, you know, they're finding best information that they can, the best, most reliable information they can about us. The reality is we're a very complex organization, not only because of our structure, but because all the Goodwills serve different community needs. You know, you may have certain communities that are more focused on serving veterans or, you know, serving families or, you know, younger workers or whatever it is. And so telling the complexity of Goodwill's story online presents a challenge, but also it's an amazing opportunity because the opportunity for storytelling ongoing is one that we really just we have really embraced over these many years of growing our digital presence.
And I see that you joined Goodwill in February of 2009, which is pretty much when the world was ending with the financial crash. So that must have been a very interesting time.
Yeah, well, what's sort of funny is that one of the first things that I did when I got here was I set up our Twitter channel. And, you know, I mean, that just seems like such an anachronism back, you know, now. It's like, you know, but I always have that to look back as one of the first things that I did here. But yeah, I mean, even at that point, the economic climate in which the U.S. and the world, you know, was really headed was very negative. And so I think people were looking to more value conscious options out there for their consumer dollar. What's been kind of interesting is to watch as how the economy has recovered, how those shoppers have continued to remain in our stores, you know, but for maybe different reasons. You know, they still want the win. They still want to go in and find that thrift find and then talk about it, of course. You know, we can't tell you the number of times that we have individuals go into one of our stores, take a photo and share it back with us. So I think the reasons for shopping our stores have changed a little bit over, you know, the time that I've certainly been with Goodwill. That experience and the value that we still present at the end of the day to our consumers is still there. It's just the dynamics of it have certainly changed. The economy has rebounded.
What would you say is your key demographic?
It depends, you know, because each of the different markets, I think, might have a little bit of a different answer for that. I think that, like a lot of other retailers out there, you're always trying to look at, you know, how do you engage your current customers, but look toward the future customers. And so, you know, we have had, you know, ongoing conversations about the next generation of shoppers. And, you know, a couple years ago, you might have said nothing but millennials. And now, of course, you're talking about the Gen Z shoppers. So so I think that always trying to find ways to connect to those next generation of customers while still making sure that you're doing a good job with, you know, the shoppers that have been in your stores for years. You know, you kind of want to keep both those going. But I think that's where digital and the new digital media platforms provide us an opportunity to reintroduce ourselves, or at least to introduce ourselves to that next generation.
If somebody doesn't really know what's going on inside the business, they might think that it's probably for a lower income demographic. But I think just from everything that I've seen myself is that a lot of professionals actually shop at pre-owned type of clothing. The keyword that you mentioned is the win, which is very interesting. That's like a psychological factor, goes across different demographics.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that we try to do is to try to say that, you know, it's not only a win for you as a shopper, because, you know, maybe you found that brand label, you know, for quite a bit less than you would have paid if you would have bought it new. But then there's also the win for the communities in which, you know, the dollars that are being spent at that Goodwill stores are going to support, you know, our mission programs and services. So we like to think of it not only as a win for the consumer, but also as a win for the community as well, because, you know, when individuals spend their dollars in our stores, that's helping to, you know, provide the revenue that then allows those local Goodwills to provide the programs and services to job seekers.
I understand that the company just launched is it a brand new mobile app or a redesigned app?
Yeah, it's so we kind of work in terms of the major and minor release nomenclature, whatever you want to call it. So this would be our third major release of our app.
What have you learned from the time that you started you know, the first launch, and, you know, how has it evolved to this day?
You may kind of remember the predictions of when mobile was going to eclipse desktop as the primary means of, you know, accessing the internet. We really keyed into that early on, because what we were noticing was we were ahead of those curves. We were ahead of those trends. A lot of our shoppers were connecting with us on the weekends, you know, as they're out and about, we're pulling up our website on their mobile device. And so I think that that was really what spurred us to get into the mobile game early. And then from there, you know, that was not only, you know, optimizing your website, but you had to, you know, figure out what you wanted to do with your app. And so our app has always really been about how do we make it easy to find and connect with your local Goodwill. And so this latest version really focuses more on the connection part of that equation. So the finding part's fairly straightforward. You know, we help you based on your current location, you know, get the turn-by-turn directions to your nearest store or donation center. But the connection part's a little different, right? So why would you want to support Goodwill? And what we tried to do is we tried to do a little bit more of that storytelling. What is the Goodwill story? And we tried to integrate that a little bit more into the app itself, you know, in order to drive that more emotional connection and, again, help people understand that we're more than a store. You know, we are a set of community-driven organizations that are trying to help individuals wherever there may be some assistance needed to find jobs and grow careers.
That community side of the story is very compelling. A lot of people are thinking that digitalized world, that everybody's basically inside their cell phone, not making connections. There is a trend that people are actually going against that, focusing more on their local community. So I think that's where Goodwill actually does the second win that you mentioned. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I would say that, you know, the mobile devices, you know, that we pretty much all have, right? They can be a distraction from the world around you. And I think that there also opportunities to really get a window of what is going on around you. So they're sort of these amazing tools that can provide walls around you potentially, or they can help sort of provide you insight into what's happening in your local community. I think that's really been kind of the one of the reasons why you could say various social media platforms have risen, is that, yeah, it gives you a window into the world, but it also makes you really aware of what's going on around you that you may have not had access to in the past. So it's an interesting technology from that perspective.
Can people actually shop within the mobile app? Can they purchase things?
Really, the intent, I think, with the app was to try to make people aware of the local in-store presence. There is a online commerce portal, shopgoodwill.com. That a local Goodwill owns and operates, and a lot of our local Goodwills will post their items on there. But really, this one it's not so focused on the explicit online or digital connection pieces, but it is also something to be said about physically stepping into our stores. And so what we wanted to do was we wanted to encourage the foot traffic, because thrift shopping can be a very sensory-driven experience. You go in, you kind of look at what's there, you never really know what to expect, but that's the exciting part. You can kind of get that a little bit online, you can kind of see everything, but again, there is something to be said about going into a store, and just especially when the inventory is always changing, trying to find something that's really unique or that you didn't expect, but you know, once you see it, you can't live without.
We all know the challenges that local retail stores have. This is common across the industry and pretty much globally. People just getting busier and busier and don't have the opportunity to actually go to the store.
We have more than 300 stores, and, you know, we like to say that most people are within 10-mile drive, or certainly less depending on where you're at, to a Goodwill. So we like to say that we're fairly findable, certainly, and we do have that advantage, I think, maybe over some other retailers out there that may not have necessarily the footprint that we do. But I think that there is something to be said. The thrift store shopping experience in general, the thrift shoppers out there, definitely a little bit of a different type of shopper than a new good shopper, in the sense that they don't necessarily mind spending time. In fact, that's part of the experience, right? It could be a social experience. You know, you take your friends out with you and you just kind of maybe hit a few different thrift stores. So I do think it's a little bit of a different mindset that the thrift shopper has over maybe sort of, again, like the new good shopper, sort of the classic department stores. But that's great, you know, and then that sort of works in favor of the in-store experience, because you can only really live the excitement of the hunt when you're in the store. I think it's a little bit of a different kind of feel if you were to try to recreate that online. And I just don't think that we're at that point yet with the technology that you can recreate the, you know, that that moment when you see something amazing that you do when you're in store.
Very interesting to see if we ever get to that point where you can actually not only feel being present inside a store, which is probably doable with the AR and VR technologies, but the touch and feel and the smell will be very interesting, you know, problems to solve.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
So how do you keep track of the success of the mobile app? What kind of KPIs are important for you?
There are sort of the traditional things that we would monitor, you know, rate of downloads, active sessions per week, all the kind of stuff that you'd expect to look at. Some specific things within the app that we are also very interested in, you know, like what are people engaging with? You know, how long do they access our locator feature? Are they accessing the storytelling piece on their, you know, via the blog? It's not only how many users we have and how many, you know, how often they're accessing it, but what are they doing when they're inside of that app too? That's really interesting. The other thing that we also want to look at is app store rankings and, you know, how well we're doing relative to the other apps that are out there. Those have all been very positive. And I think this last version of the app has kind of boosted us from a good spot to an even better spot in a lot of those ways, because we use the lessons from the last design and the feedback that we received from users and our members to inform the roadmap ahead. And so we felt really good that we had trimmed some of the areas that weren't working as well and heightened some of the areas that we really wanted to put some focus on.
Of all the KPIs or all the metrics that you keep track of, you know, for yourself personally, which one tells you you're in the right direction or not?
It really does come down to the users and what are they finding it useful. I mean, you know, what we build for at the end of the day, very much for the users. And obviously, there's a lot of input that goes into that. You know, we work with our 162 members to try to find out what are the things that they would need this app to do to make it work well within their territory. You do a lot of industry research, but you know, it kind of goes back to that zero moment of truth that we've heard about is, you know, when you put that experience in a user's hand, what do they think? Do they like it? Does it surprise and delight them? Do they hate it? So it is what the users think, that feedback, those ratings, that's one of the things that tells us, are we being successful with our endeavors in the app?
Do you expect people to actually open the app every day?
We want the app to be there, not only to be just an easy go-to resource when the urge to go shop one of our stores, or maybe they have a trunk full of their clothing or donations that they want that they're ready to drop off. You know, we want that app to be there for that. It's definitely not what I would consider daily kind of experience that we're expecting. It kind of comes down to comments, ratings, you know, and this is stuff that can show up in app stores, certainly. But I think that, you know, we also have a lot of other channels for which we receive feedback. Those are the kind of things that we're specifically looking at, you know, because I think that, you know, you can have a lot of downloads and you can have a lot of active sessions, but, you know, how do you know how good of a job you did at the end of the day, unless, you know, you're able to hear from your users and your consumers at the end of the day? And I think that that's what retailers in general always want to hear is, what's the voice of your customer? And I think that those comments and those ratings tell us and give us that voice.
The ultimate gift a customer can give you is to give you a good comment. Talking about the shopgoodwill.com, there is commerce actually on that site, and it's in the form of auctions, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So what was the thought process to go in the form of auctions as opposed to just like a regular buy it now for this price type of a strategy?
Just to be fully transparent, so that is actually operated by one of our local Goodwills. So, you know, we are Goodwill Industries International, but the Goodwill Industries of Orange County is the one that owns and manages that. And so
Orange County, California?
Orange County, California, exactly. Just from a high level, you know, I mean, it's the first nonprofit auction website that was out there. And, you know, it's just been tremendously successful. It's, you know, more than a decade old now. It recently just went through a redesign. It's obviously been used by a lot of our local Goodwills, too, to host their merchandise. And for anything more specific on strategy and so forth, really kind of, you know, our Orange County folks that I think would have to speak to that.
Talking about how this type of work is performed in organizations, how large is the team that actually manages and handles the work that you work?
Going back to our structure just real quick, the way that Goodwill Industries International supports the different members is that each of the local Goodwills is its own 501c3. You know, they have their own board, they have their own CEO, they have their own marketing departments, and we definitely work, you know, to support those local territories as much as possible across the board, you know, from Goodwill Industries International to those local headquarters to the store levels. There's more than 130,000 employees out there. GII itself, Goodwill Industries International, where we're at is more like 130. So we're actually quite a small portion of the overall puzzle. And the individual team that we have here is really just a great three-person team. But of course, you know, the stakeholders that we work with, and we have some great vendors that we work with, we pull on those resources as we need to deliver, you know, not only the website experience that we want, but the app experience as well, and keep things fresh and engaging on our social channels. So I like to think of us as a small but mighty team, but it's amazing what you can do with dedicated individuals and, you know, just an amazing amount of talent that we have access to.
The rate of innovation is not related to the number of people.
No.
Definitely
that's
not
true.
Related. It is directly related with the attitude and the mindset of the people, the leadership. The major reason, from my experience, that we are able to actually do a lot more with less people is the API revolution, how the APIs are changing integrations and the cloud, and how software is actually, you know, improving and becoming a lot more robust and open.
It's interesting about the API comment, because I think that, you know, we like to think about APIs maybe as an inter-organizational resource, so between businesses or, you know, between products. But actually, our experience has been that, you know, building APIs for just the family of products that we service and maintain has been extremely helpful, you know. So I think that there is sort of the understanding that, yeah, APIs are great, you know, to be able to pass information maybe between the government and a business or between businesses or whatever. But actually, we found that, you know, we've been able to sort of revolutionize what we do just internally here by building out our own set of APIs that we're able to leverage. That's work that continues to be done, not only internally guided, but, you know, with external agencies as well. Again, we're talking about a 130 person team here. So, you know, again, we don't have unlimited resources. So we do have to find some external vendors to augment our capabilities when we don't have it. But then when it comes to the actual maintenance, we do have some internal resources for that. It's kind of a combination of what is developed, which tends to be work with agencies, and then what is maintained, which, you know, tends to be more internal resources that help support that. Customer data can be stored in different spots. Again, a local Goodwill might have their own customer data that they house, and there might be a different solution there. The individuals that we come in contact with through our direct communication channels, we tend to store it on-premise, you know, and obviously follow all the best practices around how to maintain and secure that. But again, it's really kind of a complicated situation just because of our structure that, you know, you can't say that it's always one way, because, you know, the way that one of our members might store data is a little bit different from another. So, you know, it can't always give you a consistent answer there, but I can say that, you know, the variety of solutions out there kind of reflect whatever capabilities and resources that local market has.
Working with 162 different stakeholders is a huge job.
And again, I think, you know, the autonomous nature of those members, you know, allows them the ability to make decisions that are, you know, reflective of their needs and how they run their business. And I think that's great, you know, because ultimately we want to provide guidance and best practices, but you have to respect the on the ground or that local knowledge, because that's so important about, you know, what's the best decisions to be made, you know, for the interest of your organization.
So talking a little bit about working with vendors and agencies, what are some of the tough lessons that you've learned, or things that you like, red flags that you watch out for? I'm sure you deal with them every day, either existing or people that are trying to sell things or promote their products.
Kind of at a high level, and then more specifically is, I think that you do want to look at the portfolio of an organization. You know, you do want to do, obviously, the due diligence to kind of understand, you know, the viability of the organization, how long have they been around, you know, how many customers have they had, you know, what's their re-engagement rate, all those kinds of things to give you green flag to proceed, you know, especially if you're evaluating a new vendor. What I have found, though, is that having conversations with new vendors is very illuminating once you get past that second stage, or that first stage, I'm sorry. And that's really where you get a sense of the excitement, you know. So one of the things that we love to hear is when we're talking with someone and they have some kind of personal connection to us and our brand, you know, because that means that, you know, we're more than just another client to them. We're more than just another, you know, like a name that they can add to their website or to their portfolio list or whatever, you know. But we love to kind of hear that, you know, I grew up shopping Goodwill, or I love going there. I was just there yesterday, or, you know, I bought my Halloween costume from Goodwill. You know, even those little types of things that just gives you some sense of like a personal connection and just demonstrates that level of excitement to want to work with you beyond just sort of saying the words, right? I think the words are easy to say. I think, you know, those kinds of statements, you know, kind of transcend that a little bit. And then, you know, the big thing for me, you know, once you get into, you know, past the sort of the romance stage and you're officially dating and, you know, going steady or, you know, as whatever the metaphor is, you know, I think you it really is that
after you swiped left or right. I don't know what it
exactly,
is.
Yes, exactly. Right.
I don't use the app, but I know it's one of those. So.
Exactly. After you've swiped the way that, you know, that says, yes, let's go ahead and let's take this to the next level.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, your project manager, you know, your whoever you're working with, I think is so important. And what I have absolutely found to be true is that, you know, we really like working with our day-to-day project manager that not only is just good at client relationship and not only will hear what we have to say, but listen to what we're saying too. You know, so they do that well, but they do have a foot in the technology world too. You know, I'm not saying that it's a requirement. I'm just saying that things work really nicely when we're talking our big ideas and we're brainstorming and somebody is actively listening to us. And then at the same time, they're sort of saying, yeah, but can that be achieved? You know, based on my understanding of, you know, your environment, your, you know, what's out there in the market, you know, we can't promise to deliver that. And they can talk you into, you know, a solution that makes sense. So having a foot in both worlds, you know, good client relationship and really understanding the technology can really move things along so that, you know, false expectations aren't being set or, you know, promises aren't being made that, you know, can't be delivered. And, you know, and that's tricky because, you know, I mean, I think those kinds of individuals are very valuable to agencies. And so if you have somebody like that, you know, I hopefully you recognize that that's a really valuable member of that team.
Do you go to any of the shows?
We just went up to the NRF conference in New York.
Okay. So what are some of the like red flags when like you, the vendors, because I'm sure there is, you know, 5,000 vendors over there trying to, you know, get your attention. What are some of the red flags? Like somebody that comes up and says this brand new technology, let's say, for example, microservices or headless commerce, or, you know, and these are some things that you might actually probably do already, but I mean, something that is really like really new. It's a, how do you manage that kind of an input or, you know, information?
Yeah. You know, it just might be my generation, you know, sort of the skeptical generation, and maybe I'm just an artifact of that. But, you know, anytime, you know, you're in an environment, especially in an expo hall, you know, where there's so many vendors that are competing for your attention and they need to just, you know, like sell you on something very quickly before you move on. You know, I sort of feel like, you know, you really have to go in with just the expectation that they're, you know, you're being oversold a little bit, or that you may be, you know, being sold a little, you know, too aggressively. And that's just the nature of that environment. And that totally makes sense. So, you know, when I hear things like, you know, you have to do, you know, you have to take a look at this, or, you know, this is the next big thing. You know, we've heard a lot of that, you know, and I think that the digital revolution, there's always the next big thing that's coming up. So how do you really understand when, you know, something is legitimately going to revolutionize and be the next thing that, you know, is going to really impact businesses, consumers, you know, our lives? And I don't know. I think that you really have to kind of have that sort of healthy skepticism to say, you know, where could this not work? You know, where could this technology maybe not pan out in the way that it's being, you know, discussed or positioned? Because, and I think that part of that is knowing your own brand and knowing your own products and just understanding, you know, that what's right for you. And so somebody can say, you know, this is the next big thing and, you know, you have to get on it or you have to start thinking about it now. You know, if you really pair that against, you know, the realities of, you know, your organization, you know, your customer base, and then ask yourself, you know, honestly, it's like, does that make sense? You know, does this fit the brand? Does this fit us? That's right. Where I sort of feel like, you know, you really, you start to understand, you know, what makes sense and, you know, what are good things to be aware of, but not necessarily something that's right for you.
Great. Well, you know, that was an opening so that I could introduce my blockchain database to you. I'm just joking.
I'll talk to you in 6 months. We'll see how you're doing.
Yeah. What about Amazon? What do you think about the Amazon factor? Does Amazon come up? I mean, because in general retail, of course, it's a concern, but for your business, it might not be as big of a threat.
Yeah, well, can't exist in retail, I think, without having some discussion or awareness of Amazon, even if they're not directly in the space that you're operating. And so I think that, you know, we like to watch what Amazon's doing, because I think we have seen a number of different times when they move into certain areas, it can really make an impact, you know. So you think about, you know, the way that they even moved into, you know, sort of the, whatever you want to call it, the personal assistant world, you know, the voice search, kind of the, you know, Alexa, in other words.
Right.
I mean, you know, once they did, they, you know, immediately got out ahead of everyone else. And that's just, you know, one of the latest string of examples in which they've done that, you know. So, you know, it started with books, and then it sort of migrated into, you know, other types of product lines. And so, you know, you kind of wonder, you know, again, where Amazon is going to move next, because if it's within your industry, it's probably going to have an impact just because of the scope and scale of that organization. But you're right. I mean, largely speaking, thrift shopping and, you know, secondhand shopping is a little different, certainly, than, you know, that world. And I think, again, you know, what's sort of great is that, you know, at least for us, is that, well, yes, we have 3,300 retail stores across the US and Canada. You know, we are a nonprofit at the end of the day, you know, and that's, you know, one thing that I think will differentiate us against a privately held or publicly traded company, is that, you know, when people spend money in our stores, you know, that goes to help support job training programs for, you know, individuals in that community. And I think that, you know, that makes people feel differently about us than some other retailers out there, because, you know, it's shopping with a purpose, not just necessarily shopping, you know, for yourself because, you know, you need something, you need to resupply your set of razors or whatever it is.
That's definitely true. What I'm thinking is, like, even from the business side of the point, the picture, it would probably be very difficult for Amazon to be able to sell and display and sell the way they do, at least right now, pre-owned products.
One of the things that makes thrift and secondhand such a unique opportunity or challenge, I guess, depending on your perspective, is you really can't control the inventory, you know? So I think that is one of the key differentiators, is that, you know, we rely on the donations from individuals in our communities that we serve, you know, to provide the stuff that, you know, people are able to buy. And, you know, it's a completely different type of, you know, chain, a supply chain that you're talking about there. So, you know, while we have been at it for now 116 years, right, and have figured out a few things along the way, I think trying to figure out that, you know, could just be a whole set of headaches, you know, that, again, you know, to your point, never say never, you know, it could be figured out, but, you know, it's just such a different mindset that a retailer and, you know, thrift has to have than, you know, again, sort of a traditional department store or new goods model.
Great. Well, one last question, and feel free to not answer this. If Adam wanted to set up his own retail store, what would it sell?
Probably Star Wars.
Star Wars memorabilia?
I would say, you know, one of the things that I just, you know, I am obviously a fan, and that's what's sort of spurring that along. And I think any type of business in which you can follow your passion is great. And so, you know, I just think about, you know, just something that would be a delight to come in and to talk to people about, and, you know, to engage your customers about. I just think if it can follow something that you're personally passionate about, you know, whatever that is. And in my case, it just so happens to be in a galaxy far, far away. you know, I just think that that would just be an amazing experience, you know. And I have to say, actually, that I am very fortunate because, you know, I have found an organization that I'm very passionate to work for. And so, you know, I think that anytime somebody is able to follow their interests and what really motivates them at the end of the day and can turn that into a business or, you know, can have that as part of a standard job, I think that that's great. So yeah. So yeah.
That would be cool. So I guess we'll look forward to a shop in shop for.
There you go.
A pop up shop. Yeah, pop up shop in Goodwills.
That's right.
That would be interesting. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Adam. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
All right. Thank you very much too. I appreciate the time and appreciate the questions and the opportunity to talk a little bit about what we do here.
Yeah.